from the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins. Sitting in today for Tony is our own Sarah Perry, Director of Partnerships for Family Research Council.
Welcome to this Friday edition of Washington Watch. I am Sarah Perry, sitting in for Tony Perkins. Happy Friday to all of you listening. Stay with us for an hour as we talk about some of the top stories in the nation today and how they impact you. The National Basketball Association uses its influence to do things like object to North Carolina's refusal to allow men into women's restrooms. But on the other hand, it remains silent in the face of violation of human rights as Chinese communists put a million Uyghur Muslims in concentration camps and trample the rights of Christians and Chinese Hong Kong residents. In just a minute, I'm going to talk with Jonathan Schweppe, Director of Policy and Government Affairs at the American Principles Project. He took a stand at a recent NBA game with signs that said "Free Hong Kong" and "Google Uyghurs." We'll find out what happened within a matter of minutes. In my second segment, we're reminded that Christians are the number one most persecuted people group on earth. That's why I hope you'll put the International Day of Prayer for the Persecuted Church on your calendar on Sunday, November 3rd. You'll hear the riveting story of a woman named Lana, a Muslim who came to Christ, and what happened to her. I'll talk with Josh Youssef, President and CEO of Help the Persecuted. At the bottom of the hour, I will talk about the outrageous decision by Kellogg Cereal to create an LGBTQ cereal called All Together, featuring all of their iconic cereal cartoon characters like Tony the Tiger and Toucan Sam, to raise $50,000 for the pro-homosexual advocacy group GLAAD in support of their work. And at 42 past the hour, a Texas judge has ruled that Jeffrey Younger, the father of 7-year-old James, will have a say in any gender transition decisions the mother seeks. I'll talk with Dr. Andre Van Mol, the co-chair of the Adolescent Sexuality Committee for the American College of Pediatricians, who joined us this year at the Values Voter Summit and talked about some of the dangers of these transitioning procedures for adolescents and minors. As a reminder, TonyPerkins.com is our podcast website. And Twitter for Tony is at T Perkins. Twitter for me, at Sarah P. Perry. Go to our website so that you can find out some of the resources we'll be referencing in today's program, including our D-Block pamphlet, Responding to the Transgender Movement, A Parent's Guide. Well, I am not a big basketball fan myself, but my next guest, John Schweppe, describes himself as one. And after reading about a disturbing incident that took place at a Philadelphia 76ers game this week, where security guards ejected two spectators for displaying small signs with messages of support for Hong Kong's pro-democracy dissidents, he decided to display similar support for Hong Kong during the October 9th NBA exhibition game in Washington between the Wizards and the Guangzhou Lung Lions. Now, John is the Director of Government Affairs for the American Principles Project. He has been published at multiple outlets, including Town Hall and the Daily Caller. He's a graduate of Augustana College, where he majored in economics and finance. John, welcome to Washington Watch.
Sarah, thank you so much for having me on. I appreciate it.
Well, I think this is an important story because there is this pervasive dialogue that's developing about corporate woke activism. And right here in this story with the NBA, it is particularly problematic because of its level of hypocrisy. Now, you and several friends who are Hill staffers wore very simplistic Free Hong Kong T-shirts. But beyond that, during the Star Spangled Banner, you also unveiled a very big 8-foot-long, 2-foot-tall banner. What did the banner say, and what was the response of the NBA?
So our seats were pretty close to the court, which made it kind of cool. But we unveiled a sign that said Free Hong Kong. That was in response, as you said, to the two protesters who did it in Philadelphia the night before. And so we wanted to stand in solidarity with their effort. And so we unveiled a sign that said Free Hong Kong. And as soon as we did it, within seconds, security swarmed on us and immediately demanded that we take it down. We held it for a good minute and a half, and at that point, I went to go film it. And but we were, you know, they ended up taking the sign away and said that we could not display that sign of support for Hong Kong, especially, I mean, they didn't say this, but, you know, with the Chinese team right there, I think the NBA was very sensitive to that.
Mm-hmm. So what is the NBA policy about signage? Do you know?
Yes. So we actually looked it up ahead of time because we wanted to be totally prepared. So we knew that the first sign technically violated their policy. Their policy is that signs have to be a certain size. They can't be too big. They cannot be vulgar, and they cannot be political. So I can see why they would say that Free Hong Kong is a political statement. So what we did was we brought in a second sign that said Google Uyghurs. And as you mentioned in your intro, Uyghurs are a Muslim minority religious group in China that are actually being held in concentration camps. There's been reports that the Chinese government is actually taking their organs away from them while they're alive, just horrific stuff. And so our sign simply said Google Uyghurs. We put that up about 20 minutes later, and they, you know, at first I don't think they knew what Uyghurs were. And then once they had a little time to realize what we were saying, they demanded that we remove that sign as well.
Okay, so yeah. I can understand the political signage. Sure, that makes sense. Although, again, to point out the notable hypocrisy here, this is an organization, an association that made a point of lambasting the governor in North Carolina and threatened to pull the All-Star game because of HB2, which protected biological men and women in sex-segregated spaces, private spaces like bathrooms. So to me, the hypocrisy here is glaring. But we actually have an audio clip of an exchange that your friend had with an NBA official that you filmed. Let's listen.
I'm just encouraging people to Google the Uyghurs. It's educational. It's not political. What is political about asking people to understand what a Uyghur is? Would it be helpful if I explained what a Uyghur is? They're a Muslim minority population in China that's been put in concentration camps by the Chinese government.
Oh, no, you have hit the ideological tripwire for China. You captured this on video. It has been viewed 140,000 times, and your friend argued that this is not a political statement. It was an educational one, and I love it. He said that they are a Muslim minority population in China that has been put in concentration camps by China, all factually accurate, despite China's best propagandistic efforts to make sure we don't know that they are being placed in concentration camps. So what did they tell you when this rationale was offered?
They didn't want to hear it. I think they were informed by the NBA that there would probably be protests that night that they needed to squash. But no, they came down and they said, no, it's political. And, you know, we made our arguments that it wasn't political, but they didn't want to hear it, you know. And look, it's understandable. The NBA has decided that the Chinese market is more important than adhering to American values like free speech and free expression and religious freedom. And that's what they want to pursue. And you know, I think that's where we as American citizens need to be aware of that. It's not just the NBA. We're looking at a lot of corporations who are doing this, you know, the same type of thing. And we need to be ready to say, okay, well, that's not acceptable.
You wrote in the New York Post that you were rethinking your allegiance to the league and wondering whether you should stop attending or watching games altogether. What does this ultimately come down to for you? What is the most upsetting part of this? It's really hard for me to pick out a single strand that I find the most problematic here because there are so many particular angles. But what is it for you, John?
I think it ultimately is the hypocrisy. I understand, you know, I'm very sympathetic to the Hong Kong protesters. And I think, you know, we really need to rethink as Americans whether we should be doing business with countries like this to begin with. But what it comes down to is the NBA and some of these other corporations have gone out of their way to go after conservative Christians, to go after believers, to, you know, insist upon their California, New York values being thrust upon middle-class Americans. And I think that, you know, in contrast with their absolute silence on China, is just, it's really it's hypocritical.
It absolutely is. And this is really a frustrating disparity. And we're not seeing many organizations, many pundits call out the obvious hypocrisy here because they take such a virtuous and virtue signaling stance on HB2 in North Carolina. And yet, because profit is king, they do not want to disassociate with the Chinese League or offend Chinese officials, which to me evinces the fact that there are influences within the American realm that are being exacted by the Chinese government. It's a little terrifying to say that one of our sport associations can kowtow to a totalitarian regime. That, I think, might be an uncomfortably sort of frightening harbinger of things to come. Do you agree?
Absolutely. When we made China, you know, gave them most favored nation status so we could start doing trade with them in the 90s, we were told by our leaders that it would result in American values being exported to China. And now what we're seeing with the advent of, you know, China's economy and how multinational corporations have kind of, started working with them, we've actually seen the opposite. We're seeing Chinese values like censorship and persecution of religious minorities, and they're being sent over here to America. It's really scary. And I think it's something that the American people have to rise up and say, enough, that's not acceptable.
And I love what you wrote. You said that when Chairman Xi yanks the NBA's corporate chain, the league tells its fans, shut up and watch us dribble. I love that. It's absolutely true. Care about us when we virtue signal for the progressive left, but just ignore what we're doing right now when it comes to the patent human rights violations, the torture, the concentration camps in China. I mean, this is truly, this is a state actor of mammoth proportions committing hideous acts, the most atrocious acts imaginable. And yet, because this is an association that participates with China, within the context of sports, they don't want anyone noticing what they're doing. So do you think that even listeners who are not NBA fans should care about this?
Oh, absolutely, because it extends beyond the NBA. We have to keep a watchful eye on a lot of these corporations that are doing this. Amazon, Apple, these corporations see that market, and the Chinese government is imposing really strict restrictions on them, like, you know, if you want to come here, you have to adhere to our values. And they see that market. I mean, there's 1.3, 1.4 billion Chinese people. They see that market and they, you know, they're thinking about the money. So, but no, it's something that, you know, I won't be watching NBA games this year after this, but anyone who cares about upholding American values should care about this.
John Schweppe of the American Principles Project has been our guest today on this Friday edition. I'm Sarah Perry, filling in for Tony Perkins. Coming up next, we're reminded that Christians are the number one most persecuted people group on earth. That's why I hope you'll put the International Day of Prayer, November 3rd, on your calendar this year. Coming up next, you'll hear the riveting story of a woman named Lana, a Muslim who came to Christ, and what happened. I'll talk with Josh Youssef, President and CEO of Help the Persecuted.
We live in a time of great political division, and this division only intensifies during campaign season. The toxic tone in politics can be discouraging, which makes it a very real temptation for many Christians to wipe their hands of politics altogether. After all, if God is sovereign and controls the heart of the king, as Proverbs says, do we really need to get involved in the messy world of politics? Because political engagement can be divisive, shouldn't Christians abandon politics and direct their energies toward more spiritual pursuits? Christians are called to submit every area of their life to God, which includes how they engage in politics. But they are called to engage biblically. This requires Christians to be prepared to follow their political theology to its logical end and vote for candidates and parties that support clear biblical values. For more information on the Christian's call to engage in politics, visit frc.org/engage. That's frc.org/engage.
News. We can get it from many sources, but what can you trust these days? Where can you get news that doesn't make you as suspicious as you are informed? If you're looking for something better, for honest coverage of the latest news, one trusted news source I look to is the Washington Times. When preparing for the radio program and selecting guests to join me on the show, I will often read the Washington Times and have their reporters join me here on the program because I trust how they cover the news. Join me and more than 7 million readers who turn to the Washington Times every month to get real, trusted news. For a limited time only, listeners of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins will receive a special annual rate of $69.95 for the first year. Subscribe to the Washington Times and get this special offer by using my name and visiting washingtontimes.com/Tony Perkins. That's washingtontimes.com/Tony Perkins.
Radical abortion laws in New York, Illinois, and Vermont are challenging the sanctity of life. These laws have lifted the few existing restrictions on abortion in the name of family planning and mental health of pregnant mothers. Americans need to take a stand and defend the rights of the unborn. Family Research Council is sending Congress 90,000 baby hats as a reminder that babies should be welcomed with love and warmth, not potential danger. Supporters have already funded over 45,000 hats. We are over halfway there. Join Americans across the nation and donate $9 to send a powerful reminder that young lives need to be cherished. When you take action, we'll send you an end birthday abortion certificate that will remind you to pray for born alive babies who are facing the danger of being killed outside the womb. Visit endbirthdayabortion.com for more information. That's endbirthdayabortion.com.
Welcome back to Washington Watch on this Friday afternoon. I'm Sarah Perry, Director of Partnerships here, sitting in for Tony Perkins. Reminding you all, go to TonyPerkins.com, our podcast website. We will have resources for today's program there that you can click through and use to learn more about what's going on in your world. Well, would you believe that Christians are the most persecuted people group on earth? Every 6 minutes, a Christian is killed for following Jesus Christ, and 58% of the more than 7 million Iraqi and Syrian refugees are Christians. The International Day of Prayer for the Persecuted Church is coming up on Sunday, November 3rd. Make sure to email and call your pastor and urge him to lead a prayer at some point during the service. You can send him a link in the information we have listed at our TonyPerkins.com site under today's episode resources. Help for the Persecuted is one group on the front lines helping persecuted believers globally. Since 2011, they have helped more than 30,000 individuals and their families. 16% were directly affected by ISIS. 16% suffered physical torture or abuse. 8% had a family member killed for their faith. And 56% of those helped were converts from Islam. Joining me now to talk about the persecution and how you can take a stand through prayer and financial support is Josh Youssef, President and CEO of Help the Persecuted. Josh, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thanks for having me, Sarah.
Why do you think that the persecution of Christians, especially in the Middle East and North Africa, and I am shocked by the number of persecuted that were converts from Islam, why do you think these numbers are growing?
You know, ISIS, of course, was a big player in a lot of this, but you know, you mentioned 56% of our cases are from a Muslim background. I think the other thing that's at play here is the number of Muslims that are coming to faith in Jesus. There's been a lot written about this from Morocco all the way to Iran to Southeast Asia. We have seen more Muslims come to Christ in the last 30 years than in the really 1,400 years or 1,300 years since Islam. This is, you know, and there's a lot of study out there on how this is happening, why this is happening. Many of them are having dreams and visions. Churches are becoming bolder. A lot of Christian media has sprung up in the last 10, 15, 20 years. TV, radio, of course, the internet has had a huge impact on that. But the number of Muslims that are coming to faith is really shaking the faith of Islam. And that's an actual kind of litigious term. In Algeria and Morocco, there is a crime called shaking the faith of Islam. And it deals with those who are apostate, who leave Islam. They oftentimes, they almost always face a much greater threat than those who come from an ethnic Christian background.
Really
given one option, right? It's come back or die. And even in very moderate countries, I was at the State Department this past week, and they were talking about even in countries like Lebanon, there have been cases of people who go missing. People who are threatened, who lose their life for this being guilty of this shaking the faith of Islam.
So how does your organization connect with these former Muslims? How do you provide physical, emotional, spiritual, financial help? Because these are individuals who have risked everything to leave their traditional faith, their mother faith. So how does your organization connect with them on these levels of need?
I tell people that Help the Persecuted is kind of the CIA of this type of work. And there are a lot of traditional churches who either for whatever reason, they don't necessarily believe a convert, or they're having trouble kind of figuring out where that convert is coming from. They don't want to touch converts because it can affect their status with the government. So these are moderate Islamic countries that have a presence in that country. The government recognizes them. A convert comes in through the doors, and they don't know quite what to do with them. And so they oftentimes call our representatives and say, look, I have a case. I don't know how to handle this case. This is a kind of case that could jeopardize our relationship with the state or country that we're operating in. And so our team will step in. We have safe houses throughout the region. We put these people in safe houses. Sometimes we will move them to another state, country nearby, where they form communities. And some of them get married to other MBBs, Muslim background believers, and form families. And whole communities spring up as a result. I don't know if you know this, but even in moderate Islamic countries, your religion is on your ID card. So my last name is Yusuf. We come from a Coptic Christian background. My ID card in Egypt would say Masih, Christian, you know, but if I was Muslim, it would say Muslim. But this is a problem when you convert. You have to leave your country oftentimes and pursue a different identity. I mean, it entails a whole host of issues we have to deal with oftentimes. But this is how our team deals. They get contacts through trusted partners and other churches to handle these cases. And I really have to say our team are just the bravest, most courageous people I've ever worked with. They've taken great risks. Many of them, half of them are MBBs, Muslim background believers themselves, and they take great risks to rescue these people.
Well, and your organization has shared the story of Lana, who was home in the Middle East on a break from her graduate studies. She noticed a shift in her brother Hussein's personality, and really how he had gone from angry and antagonistic to kind and reflective. And she ultimately, through your organization, decided that she would face persecution, but there was something inside her welling up, and she could not stop sharing the gospel. This as a direct result of the work of your ministry, Help the Persecuted. So on November 3rd, for those of you listening, go to our website for more information. But remember and pray on November 3rd for these believers overseas. You're listening to Washington Watch. Coming up next, I have an outrageous story to share with you about something simple like cereal, but something much more complicated in mission. We'll be right back on Washington Watch.
Radical abortion laws in New York, Illinois, and Vermont are challenging the sanctity of life. These laws have lifted the few existing restrictions on abortion in the name of family planning and mental health of pregnant mothers. Americans need to take a stand and defend the rights of the unborn. Family Research Council is sending Congress 90,000 baby hats as a reminder that babies should be welcomed with love and warmth, not potential danger. Supporters have already funded over 45,000 hats. We are over halfway there. Join Americans across the nation and donate $9 to send a powerful reminder that young lives need to be cherished. When you take action, we'll send you an end birthday abortion certificate that will remind you to pray for born alive babies who are facing the danger of being killed outside the womb. Visit endbirthdayabortion.com for more information. That's endbirthdayabortion.com.
Hello, this is Tony Perkins, President of the Family Research Council here in Washington, D.C. I want to invite you to join Luana and myself, along with Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin, former Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann, for FRC's Israel Tour, June the 2nd through June the 12th, 2020. Whether you're sailing on the Sea of Galilee, standing in the ruins of Capernaum, or journeying up to Jerusalem, Israel is unlike any other place on earth. You'll relive the final earthly days of Jesus as you pray in the Garden of Gethsemane. You look upon Golgotha and stand in the Garden Tomb. The reality of his story will come alive in a transformative way. This one-of-a-kind tour will not only allow you to explore the land of the Bible and the roots of our Christian faith, you'll also hear firsthand from some of Israel's political, defense, and religious leaders. Join us June the 2nd through June the 12th for this life-changing experience. For more information, visit TonyPerkins.com or call 844-872-5155.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Sarah Perry, Director of Partnerships here at Family Research Council. I'm filling in for Tony Perkins. Reminder for all of you listening, go to TonyPerkins.com. Kellogg's cereal decided to create an LGBTQ cereal called All Together, featuring all of their iconic cereal characters like Tony the Tiger, Snap, Crackle, and Pop, Toucan Sam. Remember, these are cartoon characters. This is a cereal marketed toward children specifically, and they did so in order to raise $50,000 for the homosexual group GLAAD in support of their LGBTQ advocacy. And on this one, as a mother, as a pundit, it is really hard to know where to start. But here we go. The All Together cereal features their respective brands: Corn Flakes, Fruit Loops, Frosted Flakes, Frosted Mini Wheats, Raisin Bran, and Rice Krispies, all together advocating for the homosexual and transgender agenda. Together, a representation of all of the letters of the acronym LGBTQ. But of course, if you have been following stories on gender identity and the agenda of the sexualized populations among us, those who hang their hat on the notion of their sexuality being the defining characteristic of who they are, as opposed to who they are as creations in Christ, I can tell you that the T's and the Q's have an alienating effect on the L's. And if we've learned anything so far, it's that the unlikely alliance of conservatives and some hard left radical groups, including feminists and lesbians, have come together with us in support of the notion of biological identity, reality, chromosomal distinction. But of course, that isn't mentioned here because they throw in the T and the Q with all the other all-togethers. But the chief diversity officer, though one can only speculate that this is as woke a corporation as the NBA is an association, Priscilla Cantagaran said, "At Kellogg, we are firmly committed to equality and inclusion in the workplace, marketplace, and in the communities where we work and live. As part of the Spirit Day partnership, they are creating this inclusive product." Spirit Day was October 17th. We are thankfully past it, but the cereal itself was designed to help millions wear purple, to stand up against bullying, and to support a more accepting world for LGBTQ youth. The site explains the thinking behind the cereal. "We all belong together So in the first time in history, our famous mascots and cereals are offered exclusively together in the same box for All Together cereal. It's a symbol of acceptance, no matter how you look, where you're from, or who you love. Notice what is notably absent, what you believe or how you worship. But Kellogg's has offered no distinction from other organizations and corporations that have decided to kowtow to the cultural left that has captured bureaucracies at American corporations. It is, after all, the easiest thing to do right now. Follow the prevailing narrative. What the mainstream media is telling you, what all the pundits and all of the social media metrics indicate to you is the right approach, and then base your business model on said approach. The entire design of something like this is to shape the cultural politics and behavior of not only its corporate management, not only its employees, not only its entire environment, but those who purchase it. It's like a church organization trying to catechize and disciple its consumers in true religion. And here I quote from Rod Dreher, someone much more intelligent than me, but who has put his finger on the pulse on this one. Woke capitalism, you see, is a vanguard of soft totalitarianism. Buy our products, and at the same time, we will tell you what to believe. The politicization of the company's culture, naturally, is critical to its business success. And being culturally woke ensures profit. But in this one, for instance, in particularly marketing to youth, I have one precise issue. You are telling my children what to believe with your characters. And in fact, The Guardian has published an article by Susan Lynn, director of the Campaign for a Commercial-Free Childhood and a professor at Harvard, who argued that advertising in and of itself is harmful to children. Marketing targets emotions, not intellect. It trains children to choose products not for the actual value of the product, but because of the celebrity or what's on the package, because of things like the messaging of the package. And of course, as the narrative begins to shift toward the acceptance of all the letters of the alphabet, many kids who don't hold these perspectives find themselves on the outside. It is hard enough at school, where social contagion sweeps like a fire through public education, through charter schools. It is doubly hard when the television and the grocery store are now giving you the exact same message. So my thinking here with Kellogg's really comes down to one thing. Not only is this an unethical approach to marketing, not only is this cultural woke activism in keeping with everyone else who is doing an unoriginal thing, but they need to mind their business and do their business. That business is cereal, not politics. You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Sarah Perry, Director of Partnerships, sitting in for Tony Perkins on this Friday afternoon. Go to TonyPerkins.com. Follow Tony on Twitter at TPerkins, or me, if you care to, at Sarah P. Perry. Coming up next, we'll talk about a kid in the middle and the danger of transgender policies with the youth.
Hello, this is Tony Perkins, President of the Family Research Council here in Washington, D.C. I want to invite you to join Luana and myself, along with Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin, former Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann, for FRC's Israel Tour, June the 2nd through June the 12th, 2020. Whether you're sailing on the Sea of Galilee, standing in the ruins of Capernaum, or journeying up to Jerusalem, Israel is unlike any other place on earth. You'll relive the final earthly days of Jesus as you pray in the Garden of Gethsemane. You look upon Golgotha and stand in the Garden Tomb. The reality of his story will come alive in a transformative way. This one-of-a-kind tour will not only allow you to explore the land of the Bible and the roots of our Christian faith, you'll also hear firsthand from some of Israel's political, defense, and religious leaders. Join us June the 2nd through June the 12th for this life-changing experience. For more information, visit TonyPerkins.com or call 844-872-5155.
Planned Parenthood is not pro-woman. For decades, the nation's leading abortion supplier has claimed to be the champion of women's rights, but nothing could be farther from the truth. Planned Parenthood has repeatedly violated the law and violated women, from aiding and abetting sex traffickers, covering up child sexual abuse, and selling the remains of aborted baby parts, to ignoring the devastating effects that abortion has on women's physical and mental health. From its racist eugenic roots to the targeting of vulnerable communities, Planned Parenthood is an organization that not only promotes a culture of death, but makes it a reality. In a new brochure from FRC, you will find evidence that will challenge your assumptions about Planned Parenthood and equip you with the information you need to be a true champion for women and the lives of unborn children. To order this brochure and to download your free digital copy, visit frc.org/Planned Parenthood.
We live in a time of great political division, and this division only intensifies during campaign season. The toxic tone in politics can be discouraging, which makes it a very real temptation for many Christians to wipe their hands of politics altogether. After all, if God is sovereign and controls the heart of the king, as Proverbs says, do we really need to get involved in the messy world of politics? Because political engagement can be divisive, shouldn't Christians abandon politics and direct their energies toward more spiritual pursuits? Christians are called to submit every area of their life to God, which includes how they engage in politics. But they are called to engage biblically. This requires Christians to be prepared to follow their political theology to its logical end and vote for candidates and parties that support clear biblical values. For more information on the Christians' call to engage in politics, visit frc.org/engage. That's frc.org/engage.
Welcome back to Washington Watch on this Friday afternoon. I keep saying Friday. Do you know why? Because I'm glad it's Friday. I bet you are too. But we've got 20 minutes still, and this is an important topic. We've got a lot of parents who listen to this program, and you're going to be interested in this particular segment. I love what Matt Walsh wrote on Tuesday in a piece for the Daily Wire. He said, quote, anthropologists in the future will spend a lot of time discussing and debating the question of when exactly the once great American civilization went insane, why it happened, and how, end quote. He was referencing the outrageous Texas court decision on Monday that prohibits Jeff Younger from stopping the so-called gender transition of his 7-year-old son, James. Now, Mr. Younger's ex-wife, Anna Gorgulis, the mother of the twin boys, James and Jude, plans to infuse James with female hormones, which will chemically castrate him. Now, remember, 7-year-old boy. After days of outcry across the political spectrum, Texas Judge Kim Cooks ruled yesterday that Jeffrey Younger, the father of James Younger, will have decision-making power over the boys' medical decisions. This is a joint conservatorship between both parents, both having an equal say in the medical decisions over the child. It's big news because it gives him at least the authority to veto any attempts by the mother to transition the 7-year-old boy into a girl named Luna. Now, before I introduce my next guest, I do very much want you all to hear a clip that we have. This is a victory for common sense, but we need to remember precisely what is at play psychologically when it comes to transing these kids, a 7-year-old boy's medical future, and his identity is at stake. My 7-year-old thought he was a firefighter once, and of course he is not. So let's listen to the audio clip of a discussion between the father talking to his son, James.
Oh, you're a boy, right?
No, I'm a girl.
Who told you you were a girl?
Mommy.
When did she tell you you were a girl?
Because I love girls.
Oh, I see. So mommy told you you were a girl?
Uh-huh.
Does mommy do anything else, like with a girl with you?
Mm-hmm.
Like what? What does she do?
She do... put them on me.
She puts dresses on you? Oh, wow. And what else does she do?
she buys my headbands.
Uh-huh.
And she gets me hair clips.
Oh, hair clips? Okay. Mm-hmm. What else? Does she do anything with your fingers?
Yeah.
What?
She paints my nails.
Why does she do that?
Because I love like nail polish.
Oh. So mommy puts you in a dress and puts nail polish on you?
Mm-hmm.
And what does mommy tell you?
She tells me I'm a girl.
Oh, okay. Do you think you're a girl?
Uh-huh.
Well, joining me to discuss this situation and to discuss the fact that this is a 7-year-old boy, and you see how easily he appears to be maneuvered from one perspective to another, and even the judge admitted the fact that he was of an uncertain mind as to his own gender identity, is Dr. Andre Von Mohl. He's the co-chair of the Adolescent Sexuality Committee for the American College of Pediatricians, a board-certified family physician, former U.S. Navy officer, and a member of the Christian Medical and Dental Association. He's an elder at Bethel Church. He lives in Redding, California, with his wife, their two sons, one daughter, and a steady stream of foster kids. Dr. Von Mohl, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hi, thank you much.
Well, no matter where you turn, you see this tragic transgender push from virtually every sector of society. You and I have discussed this, and I reference this because for those of you who didn't make it to our Values Voter Summit this year, I encourage you to go to valuesvotersummit.org, and there you will find archived sections of each of our lectures and our main stage panels. And we did a panel with Dr. Von Mohl, and he has excellent commentary on this issue as someone who speaks as an expert in the field. But we know that we've seen media, academia, the pop culture. It is critical that we have to speak out against it. But this particular case I find tremendously heartbreaking because it seems that Jeff's ex-wife, Anne Jorgulis, would know better since she is a trained pediatrician. And yet, based on this conversation that we just heard and what we know of the court record, that which was released to the press, her liberal ideology has somehow trumped her understanding of the basic facts about human biology and child psychology. And that bothers me tremendously. Is a 7-year-old this impressionable, this malleable? Would it be possible for a parent to have placed an idea like you are actually a girl into a child's head based on where they are in development?
Well, the child got it from somewhere. You know, the media is doing it too if the parents aren't. It's, you know, historically speaking, the prevalence statistics of what we'd be calling gender dysphoria would be infinitesimal, thousandths of a percent. And as you're aware, in the past year, there was a survey of American kids that showed 2% of them identified as possibly transgender. Well, something changed there, and it certainly wasn't biology or genetics. So what we're seeing is what's being called a social contagion type phenomenon.
Now, talk to us a little bit about the social contagion, because this is something about which I have heard discussion, particularly as involves prepubescent and pubescent girls, because, of course, there is the notion of peer pressure and what happens to be popular at the time. How does a phenomenon like that work, and how does it affect kids?
Well, Lisa Lippman, who's a professor at Brown University, released a parent survey in 2018 of parents whose children develop what was called rapid onset gender dysphoria, meaning, you know, they're suddenly talking about it when they never spoke about it before earlier in their upbringing. And they found certain hallmarks. One was that they each have one or more friends that themselves came out as trans identifying, that these kids were engaging in an increasing amount of social media and web use, that the child's mental health seemed to deteriorate as this was going on, and that the kid would then isolate themselves increasingly from their family or any friends that weren't trans-identified. And then it gets to the point, of course, where they won't trust any information that's not from a solidly trans-affirming source. But look around. We've got cereal boxes now. Corporate America is falling into it nicely woke, throwing it at kids. And of course, it's very hard to know
what your kid might be watching on TV or looking up on the web when you're at work. But there's no shortage of information very supportive of the fad. And it is a fad, and it's a regrettable one. You know, if we're just talking about the idea of what's going to happen in a little kid's life, and not even a little kid, but say, you know, a tween or a teenager, the overwhelming expectation of gender dysphoria is that it will go away on its own by adulthood, well over 85% of the time, but not if you medicalize it. And, you know, what are the ethics involved in trying to medicalize a condition that normally goes away? And once you've medicalized, you're a patient for the rest of your life, either to get the hormones or to, you know, be fighting the complications of them. Or, you know, if a kid engages in some degree of surgery, and I'm saying kid because you don't have to be 18 to get this so-called gender-affirming surgery that we used to call sex reassignment surgery, also a false term. It's impossible to change biologic sex. But, you know, you can get your head out of the clouds. I mean, you can come to your senses, but what's gone is gone. We protect children from drinking under the age of 21. They can't drive under 16. There's all manner of things they can't do until 18 years of age around the world for the simple fact that we know kids have developing brains. They change their minds a lot. Their brains aren't fully developed. They tend to be rash and impulsive, and they simply need to be protected until they can make decisions of their own. I mean, you know, from a legal standpoint, the answer is always going to be, well, you know, adult decisions fall on the adults. You know, that's your responsibility. But for kids, adults are supposed to be protecting them. They're supposed to have an instinct to do that. And that's being penalized and being called transphobic.
Well, and then, of course, in a situation like this where you have two parents who are divorced, but they have a joint conservatorship over a child, and when the child is with his mother, she says that she dresses him in girl clothing, that she always requests girl toys for him, and has been painting his nails since he was just 3 years old, which to me, and again, there is, as Shakespeare says, no art to know the mind's construction by the face. I will not guess at her motives, but boy, oh boy, you start to paint your child's nails at three, your biological son, one would think he would have a hard time differentiating for himself who he truly is. So, to me,
and the child wants to please the people around him.
Yes. Oh, I'm so glad you said that, because there are so many aspects to this notion of gender identity and where we're going culturally that you can pick one of multiple angles on this. But this is a particular one that, for me as a mom, strikes at my mother's heart, because it is a child so anxious to please his mother that he will go along with that fiction strictly because he believes it will secure the affection that she gives him. That, to me, is the most heartbreaking part of this.
Yeah, and this is part of the reason why the international standard of care for a kid with gender dysphoria is what's called watchful waiting. That means you let things, you know, take their time and develop, but it also includes extensive psychological evaluation of the child and the family, because you are highly likely to find a multiplicity of issues in both. You know, both the psychological issues the child may be bringing to it and the family dynamics that are going on. And as we've talked about before, a particularly vulnerable group are kids with autism spectrum disorder. They tend to think in concrete terms for quite a long time, and also tend to fixate on ideas. And then to fixate on the idea that, oh, now I know why I'm so different than the other kids, I'm trans, becomes quite a trap.
Right. Well, and again, you and I, we've had this conversation both on stage at Values Voter Summit and off. But as the mother of a teenager on the autism spectrum, me, I have to tell you that there is no question to my mind, the untrained, non-medical mind, that these are kids who are anxious to fit in, and they are always of a vague sense, some less vague than others, that they are in one way or another different from their peers, and particularly for girls who have a flat affect and tend to drive themselves toward more matter-of-fact presentations, their manners of speech, their idiosyncrasies, even their manner of dress, because they don't like to be uncomfortable. They will not gravitate toward frilly things. Sensory issues are a big thing for kids on the autism spectrum. In addition to ASD diagnoses, that comorbidity, something that's really at the root of this gender identity notion. What are some other behavioral or mental health issues that might be at work in these kids who believe they're in the wrong body?
Well, besides what we've been talking about in terms of social imposition or family communications, for example, you know, say a parent was directly telling a child, well, I wish you were a daughter if he's a son or vice versa. And I'm not speaking specifically about this case. I'm talking about overarching principles. But also for the kid themselves, depression, anxiety, personality disorders are extremely common. Then we can get into other subcategories there. But this is the reason why skilled psychological intervention is supposed to be part of the deal with these things. And what we're seeing increasingly now with the American mental health establishment and parts of the medical establishment, they've largely given up on their job of investigating underlying causes. And when they do that, what we're left with is what I'm calling the cult of affirmation. You affirm, and parents are bullied with this, you know, well, do you want a dead son or a live daughter, this kind of thing. And it's a falsehood that gender-affirming therapy is shown to reduce suicide. It's entirely experimental and is described as such in the worldwide medical and psychological literature. But somehow in America here, we're pushing ahead as though it's, you know, affirm the illusion or the kid's going to kill themselves, and it's simply not the way it is.
That's an important distinction because that is a driving narrative, I think, for many of us who are struggling against pressing forward with biological and chromosomal reality and saying the true and obvious thing, which is biology matters. It is irrefutable. We are driven by the defense of, well, but we also don't want these kids to harm themselves. And knowing that that is not true is so important for our listeners because all of us care about our kids and we certainly don't want to see them hurt.
Right. And another thing for parents to understand is there are, I don't want to paint entire fields here, but there are counselors, mental health experts, some pediatricians who actually coach these kids into what to say to their parents and to basically say, I tried to kill myself and I'm going to kill myself if you don't support my transition. So don't panic if you hear your child say that, but realize that someone who says they're going to kill themselves is in crisis and needs help immediately. And that help does not take the form of cross-sex hormones, puberty blockers, and surgery.
Well said, Dr. Van Wall. We so appreciate your expertise on this. Do you think, here at our last minute, do you think the gag order that Judge Cooks put on the father was a little extreme? He can't talk to the press about his case.
From what I am hearing from others, it's actually a relatively common thing. It's in part why you're not hearing more about cases just like this that are happening from coast to coast in the U.S. and in Canada. Apparently, it's somewhat common to put gag orders on the parents involved.
Well, as a reminder to those of you listening, valuesvotersummit.org is where we have the archived copy of the panel that Dr. Van Mol and I had together. TonyPerkins.com for other resources, including FRC's Parents Guide to Understanding the Transgender Movement. Until we see you next time on Washington Watch, stand strong, speak God's truth, and as I like to tell my three kids, love people like Jesus. We'll see you next time.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.